Welcome to the 1000 Hours Outside podcast. My name is Ginny Erich. I'm the founder of 1000 Hours Outside. We've got two friends on with us today, Matt Ottoman and Emily Heise from Connective Kids. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
You guys are doing amazing work. I love being on your Instagram and seeing all these videos, all this information you're putting out to parents. You are combining, this is like a new thing. You're combining physical therapy with chiropractic care.
Yeah.
And it's miraculous.
Yeah. We're not afraid of being the black sheep and working against the grain. Yeah. That's what we're about.
Yes. Okay. And I've seen the videos. They look like a miracle where it will be like day one, day three. And you're like, is that even the same kid? It's incredible to watch. I'd love to hear a little bit of your story. Emily, I know a little bit of yours that you had your own daughter was not hitting some certain milestones, but love to hear, maybe we'll start with Emily, how you ended up in this space.
Yeah, so I have been a pediatric physical therapist for the past 14 years. My second daughter, when she was born, she had terrible acid reflux. And now I know this, is that there is a cascade of events that happens with acid reflux that can cause muscle tightness and gross motor delays, which is insane because no one talks about it. So my daughter Heidi was 10 months old and went to the pediatrician and he was like, she's going to have to go to PT. She could only sit. She couldn't move. She couldn't crawl. She couldn't walk. She just was a happy sitter, as I called it. And as a pediatric PT, I was like stressed because obviously I'm like, I should be able to have seen this and figured it out. But it was finally like putting into action with my own child what I'd been doing for so many years. And I was like, okay, we're going to see if this works. So for 20 minutes a day for 6 weeks with a chiropractic added in three times a week, she went from just sitting there to crawling, walking, doing all the things, 20 minutes a day. And I was like, holy moly, I want to build a business off of this. I want to incorporate chiropractic and PT and do this for all kinds of kids, typical kids, neuroatypical kids, like all kinds. Let's just jumpstart things because us as parents, we don't have time to be sitting around and have 6 months to a year in physical therapy. That's expensive and it's just, we don't have that type of time, right? So I was like, let's expedite this. And so this method just came to me after Heidi. And then in 2020, I started Connective Kids, the Instagram, and organically in a year went up to 100,000 followers. And I'm like, holy moly, I guess people care about this. I mean, I think pediatric PT is interesting, but most people don't. But I tried to put a different spin on it and really educate and empower parents and really break the stigma of what a child who may have delays, that doesn't mean they're broken and it doesn't mean you're broken as a parent. I just wanted to shed light on it. And that's what it did. And after, 2021, Matt, is that when you joined?
So yeah, we first connected in 2020. So funny, I did not want to be a pediatric chiropractor. Like I was always sports. I played baseball.
You're like a sports guy, right?
Yeah. I played professional baseball and I was like, I'm just going to work with athletes all the time. And I think just having that background mindset of looking at how the body functions and moves has really helped me. But yeah, fast forward to 2020, 2019, I had my first child, Maeve. And in March of 2020, I found Emily's Instagram and I loved her idea of purposeful play because you're going to play with your child as a parent. Why not do it in a purposeful way to help with their gross motor development and brain development and, you know, build that connection with them. So we reached out, connected, and I didn't realize this at the time, but she was really like testing me to see how good I was. So she would send me some like really tough cases.
Oh yeah.
And we would like go back and forth on what we're seeing because, you know, obviously different professions, we look through a different lens at the same child that's coming in. So just kind of honing in on what we're saying and what we're doing to work together. Fast forward to now where we have seen kids from 20 different countries and 40 states that have come through our doors with our method. It's really amazing.
Yeah. Wow. That is far reaching. 20 countries, 40 states, people coming in from all over the world. What is it about chiropractic care and pediatric physical therapy that pair so well?
You know, it's so interesting that it hasn't been paired together prior to this, because it truly is this harmonious relationship, because chiropractors, a pediatric chiropractor, especially Matt, really has a more of a corrective method. He's going to take away joint and muscle restrictions, and he's going to allow that child to move freely. But if you don't pair that with physical therapy and teach them functional movements to maintain that new available range of motion, then you just lose it. So you have to put one with the other. You have to, you know, lengthen the muscles and get the joint mobility and then pair it with sitting and crawling and hands and knees play. And then that child now can functionally achieve these skills. So it's really beautiful.
And looking at specifically gross motor development, there's so much brain development that happens. So a couple statistics, I'm a statistic guy. So in the first 3 months, the first 90 days, a child's brain will grow 1% every day for the first 3 months. And in 2 years, even though their brains are smaller than an adult brain, they actually have more synapses. Synapses are how your brain and your body communicate. It's how we're able to know like what's going on in our toes and our hands and how we're interacting with the world. So there's more connections at 2 years old than we have as adults. And I think that's designed in a specific way with gross motor development, where they're learning to move and learning all this. So when we put chiropractic and PT together, specifically for gross motor development, we're really setting success for the future. We're building these strong connections so they can function, so they can go climb trees outside, so they can go, you know, and play and do all the things that as kids you want to do.
Yeah.
Wow. You're the only ones doing it. It's fascinating. Talk to me about these tools that you use, Matt, because I saw this tool, looks like a stick kind of. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like you have these tools that you use and you talk about how this is helping. I thought this was really interesting that this is helping with their proprioception. And that's something that we've only talked about just a little bit, but you made it make so much sense. It's like, why do we need to know what's going on with our joints? How's that tool helping?
Yeah. So we'll start with proprioception. So proprioception is knowing where your body is in space. So every joint in your body has a little cell in it that sends a signal to your brain that says, hey, this part of your body is moving. So as adults, if we sit at a desk or we're stuck inside, right, and we're just kind of sitting there, what happens is our low back starts to tighten up and our joints don't move as much. So our brain loses the connection with our low back. And that's why something as easy as like taking out the trash, you may pick it up. Your brain doesn't know what's going on with your lower back. So it fires the muscles at the wrong time. That's when you go into a spasm. So that's really important. I say that with adults just so we can conceptualize it. But then moving to with kids where they're learning to interact with the world, especially if they interact with the world through their mouth, if they have any kind of tightness or they're stuck to one side, they're only going to know that the world exists to one side because they don't know what their body can do yet. So by using some of the tools that I use, like the chiropractors are really cool at naming things. There's one called the activator. And then there's another tool called the integrator. I use the activator. That's a really great way to find these little restrictions. And because a child's bone structure is different than an adult, it doesn't take much force. So this is a very light and safe tool to use to get that receptor cell to fire so that they can connect with their brain. And then I also use another tool called the Arthrostim, which is a repetitive, it's kind of like a massage gun, but again, very gentle. And it just kind of almost like a vibration, and I can bring their focus to certain areas.
So fascinating. That's the one I think I saw the most because it's connected to something that's probably the Arthrostim.
Yeah.
Because you see these kids and all, I mean, the change that they can make, and you run a camp that they can come to for, is it a 2 week thing?
It's either 2-4 weeks. I mean, really we could tailor it to the child. It just depends on kind of what the family goals are. But again, we've made amazing progress in as little as a week and or 5 weeks. So it really can just be tailored.
And is it really, I mean, that's for the camp, but in as little as a couple hours, I mean, sometimes you're like, this is the beginning of this session and this is the end. And you see with that Arthrostim, I guess, like, you know, then they're, you see it. Like you see that it's opening up their brain and they're like, all of a sudden they're realizing, oh, my body can do these other things. Can we talk about, is actually some of the best books that I have read are written by pediatric occupational therapists in terms of books about play. So the books that I reference the most, especially when my kids were young, are Balanced and Barefoot by Angela Hanscom, pediatric occupational therapist, and Smart Moves by Dr. Carla Hanford. That profession has got this front row seat to see what's going on with kids and how can we help them. So I would love just a little bit of an overview. Like what is it? Is a general trend? You've been doing this for 14 years. This is the period of time when screens have become pervasive. This is a period of time when we're often seeing small children with an iPad with screens. I totally get it. Parenting is really hard. Can you tell us like what you're seeing in the field with children, trends that are going on today?
Yeah, I think you put the nail on the head there, saying like we're trying to, survive. We're not always thriving, right, as parents. So it's very easy, myself included, to give your kiddo a screen. But here's the thing. If we just kind of step outside ourselves and really know and even go into different avenues like Instagram and getting some ideas of how you can actually play with your kid, it's really fun. And a lot of times it could be as simple as messy play. Get some shaving cream, get a cookie sheet, let them paint with their toes. You're strengthening up their core. And you just spent an hour and a half, and then they clean it off in the hands and knees position. They are so happy. They are engaged. They're social, they're cognitive, their physical development is enhanced. And it was all with a shaving cream. You know what I mean? But again, you kind of have to step outside of what you know and what you're comfortable with, get your hands a little dirty, maybe even research through like my Instagram shares so many of these ideas, but it's so much easier than you think. It really is. But we've kind of gotten away from that because of just the hustle and bustle of life.
Yeah, and I think people don't know that simple works so well. And I remember Angela Hanscom talking about that. Like she would say, we're trying to get these kids used to having wind in their face. And so she's like, I'm using a fan. But if I just take them outside, there's going to be wind in their face. And I remember that even with my really little ones, like 4 months, we lived near Lake Michigan. I literally remember going to Lake Michigan in the winter and our 4-month-old going, like, and I'm like, oh, it's something he has to learn, like how to catch his breath in this environment. And it's something you wouldn't even think of that they have to learn. So, Matt, I had seen on your Instagram, and let me just throw these out here so people know what we're looking at. We're looking at Kinactive underscore kids. So that's KINACTIVE, Kinactive underscore kids. And then you link out there to Matt, which is Dr. underscore Otto, OTTO underscore DC. So I had seen one, we were just talking about common mistakes. And I think sometimes when we're, you don't know what you don't know. This is the trickiest thing about parenting. I think so many of us are like, oh, I wish I could go back with the knowledge I have now, but I didn't have it then. So what are some things that we need to know kind of right out of the gate? What are some common mistakes that you see families making?
Yeah.
I know well-intentioned.
Right. Yeah. And I have made these mistakes myself. And I don't mean to, this is not a shaming or anything like that. I think there's power with education to understand so that we can leave the world better than we found it. So as much as we can, I think take that with a grain of salt. So some mistakes that we see when I look at the perspective of somebody coming to us with a gross motor delay. So let's focus on that. So maybe they have some kind of gross motor delay, which means they're not rolling, they're not sitting, they're not crawling on time, and they need a little bit of help. We can kind of look back and say, okay, what are some of the scenarios that happened that may have caused some of this? Because every mom wants to know, why is this happening? So I think first and foremost, I do think reflux is a big one. And I think reflux gets, there's, we call it the cascade of events that happen from reflux. And I feel for the parents out there that their child has reflux. It's terrible. They're screaming, they're mad, they're upset, they don't eat, they don't want to be in their tummy, and you're doing all the right things. So what are you supposed to do? You go to the pediatrician, they give you some reflux medicine to help, and there's 100% a time and a place for that. However, what happens with reflux is they get into these motor patterns, which maybe, and you're not supposed to see this as a parent because you're their parent. That's what we're here for. Is they're getting stuck in extension. They're arching their arms back and they're throwing their head back. Well, what that does is delay their ability to push through their hands. If they don't push through their hands, they're going to have a hard time sitting, hard time crawling. So we can look back and say, okay, here's some things that you can do going forward. Play with a purpose, put them over a pillow, have their hands, weight bearing on the ground. That would be one. I also think containers. Again, I think there's 100% a time and a place. You're busy.
This is a new word, Matt. Like, this is a new word
Yes.
that our youngest is 7. So, and I saw this on your side, and obviously I understand what it is, but is this like new term? Are people now just now starting to? This is like the bumbo, right?
Right, that's one of them. I think containers became big in 2020 to 2022 when everything that happened with the world, everyone's working from home. And we started, so containers are things that you can put your kids in, like a bumbo seat or some kind of
Extra
seat,
saucer.
an extra saucer, a jumper, right? All those things. And again, we're just trying to survive and do what we can. We're working from home. I remember my wife working from home, kids in the background, sitting there screaming, like she's trying to get on a call, very stressful. She can't interact, but she also has to work. So all that, again, with a grain of salt, you know, we get into the, what's easy is we have these containers, which then can restrict their movement because kids are designed to move. I know that was really long-winded.
But. No, I mean, I think, it's interesting to say that they restrict their movement because, I mean, they are, and I remember, like, we had a baby Einstein exercise there, and it's, like, the best thing ever, right? There's, like, they spin around, there's, like, stuff everywhere. If they're starting to, like, pick up little snacks, you can put it in there. So it seems like it's the best thing ever, and I know stuff changes so rapidly with, like, what's available. So I would, now I see, I'm like, oh, I wish I would have had that when I was, you know, when I had a little kid, or all these different types of things. But I remember, you know, it was tummy time. Like, you had an idea, like, this is important. And I have been a teacher. I remember I taught high school, but I remember the kindergarten teachers talking about how the kids didn't come in with enough fine motor, and they had to, like, they couldn't flip their pencil, and they couldn't hold it with the right grip, and they were breaking their pencils. But when I would put my babies on their tummy, they would scream.
That's a big complaint of most parents. Why, like, why in the world would, during their short wake times, would you make your baby cry? You wouldn't. So you just don't want to do it. But here's the fun thing is tummy time is not the holy grail. There are so many other positions that contribute to your child's development, both biomechanically and, you know, just in their cognitive and social. So anything in excess is a bad thing. So if you only put them on their tummy, they're going to have compensations because of that. Maybe they only like to be on their belly. They become an army crawler because those back muscles are so strong. But playing on their back, playing on their side, playing in a vertical position, you know, seated in front of you on a table, all of those are going to contribute to their development as well. So just know that, yeah, tummy time, they may not love, but you have all these other positions. And there is something that you can do at tummy time to make them like it more. Getting those shoulders above the hips, okay? Getting them propped up on a boppy pillow, propped up on your chest, putting a little towel roll underneath their armpits. Doing something like that allows them to elevate and lift their head and makes it more tolerable, right? No one wants their nose smashed into the ground. So I get why they're upset.
Well, and it's a short, I mean, it's a short period of time because they do start rolling. And people talk about that with their kids putting things in their mouth. Like if you take your child outside and they're like putting in acorns and you're like, this is awful. Like, but it really, it ends before you even realize and it's over. Same thing with the tummy time. Then they're kind of on the move. But you're talking about, I actually like, I love movement milestones. I think they're really neat because they actually extend throughout your lifetime. And we talk about them in terms of the ones that you're talking about, like sitting, you know, the first steps, toddling. But I've always been intrigued with like riding the bike and swimming and climbing a fence and skateboarding. And I just went on a hike with my daughter and, you know, I struggled. It was like uphill. We're wearing cleats in the snow in the Rocky Mountains. And so I'm like, this is a big milestone for me, right? He's trying to get up these steep things and, you know, without falling. And so I love that. And I love how you pair it with brain development because it's inspiring parents to do that more often. But you know, the milestones that we're all like, everyone is really in tune with are these ones that happen, you know, tend to happen within the first year of life, you know, 15 to 18 months. Can you talk to us about, as a parent, what would you be looking for in terms of delay and needing some extra support?
Yeah. So there loosely, when it comes to, I say loosely because there's a sliding scale of when gross motor skills should be achieved. But that is something to think about because you need to know that time frame to know if there is a delay. So there's about a 1 to 2 month sliding scale. For instance, sitting erect and sitting up nice and tall without using their hands, that can occur anywhere from 6 to 8 months. Okay. And then crawling, that can happen anywhere from 8 to 12 months. But there is like a nice range in there. What you need to kind of look at as parents is, are these skills emerging? Are they attempting to do them? Meaning, are they on their belly trying to move themselves forward? Or are they just happy as a clam laying on their back? And if they are, if you put them on their belly, do they just lose their mind and not even attempt to roll? So you have to look at, are they attempting these skills? Because kiddos are scrappy and they are going to do anything they need to do to move. So if you don't see movement, that is a little bit of a red flag. And that's kind of the easiest and most simplistic way I can describe it.
Yeah. I love when you talk about the range because that's a big range.
Yeah.
Like if you say 8 to 12 months, and I just always am like, oh, if we could only take that approach that we have to small children and like take it as a little, like what if they don't learn to read till they're 8? You know, I'm like, that's sliding scale, right? Like, can we take it and allow our children to develop, when is the time for them? Because there's nothing you can, like, if they're the ones that's going to walk when they're 9 months, you can't stop them.
No.
If they're the ones that's going to walk when they're 15 months, that nobody cares. Like, you're not going to be like, right? Like, you're an athlete, man. Like, be like, you know, you're going to go in and play Major League Baseball. They'll be like, well, when did you learn to walk? Like, nobody cares.
I had a parent ask me, like, well, what did you do? What do you recommend? I want to have a professional athlete. What are you recommending? And the kid's like, two. And I'm like, go outside and play and use both of your hands and play multiple sports and do all of these things. Like,
What a thing for a parent to say out loud.
I know.
That's interesting. I want to have a professional. Don't we all?
Yeah. A lot of it is managing. I think with parents, there's this comparison society, which talking about, like, you know, gross motor skills, and there's not this smooth trajectory. Like, there's textbook of way, you know, you start with rolling tummy to back, then it goes rolling back to belly, then sitting, then crawling, then walking. But really, kids are different. Every body is different. So they may, you know, roll tummy to back and then all of a sudden they stop doing it, or they roll belly to back first, or they back to belly first. And it's kind of like out of the textbook order, but kids are scrappy and they figure out how to move. And sometimes they may need a little bit of help along the way, but it's just like all of us.
On weekends, we're typically off on another adventure, whether it's a scenic hike or a quaint town visit. I keep my Vessies with me because they effortlessly adapt to every twist and turn, ensuring comfort and style in our sometimes spontaneous escapades. Whether it's with the kids or just my husband and me, which is pretty rare, I love stepping into a great outdoor adventure with Vessies Storm Burst boots to capture the beauty of springtime landscapes. Their robust style is perfect for our nature excursions, adding a little dash of elegance to our outdoor explorations. The Vessi collection caters to every style. Whether you're dressing up for a night out or gearing up for a weekend hike, these shoes seamlessly blend into your wardrobe while offering the practicality of waterproof footwear. Ready to refresh your spring wardrobe? Vessi has you covered with footwear that fuses style with practicality. Head over to vessi.com/outside to explore their versatile collection and automatically claim your 15% discount on your first order upon checkout. That's vessi.com/outside for 15% off your first order.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play, and we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
So the videos that I see, I mean, this is like the two of you on the ground. And in fact, when Emily like came in for the session, she was like, I'm like, is Emily always got her hair, like the cute braid on the side and the outfits? And I was like, oh, you're like, I'm sweaty. I was like, oh, was she just working out? You're like, no, I'm just, you know, I'm working with the kids. I mean, and this is a newer partnership. So it's pretty neat to see. I mean, you are right there. You got the tool with the attachment and, you know, we're grabbing the sides and I was putting the foot down on the floor, and you can, I mean, see in real time how this is impacting the children. Was this a long process? It couldn't have been that long because this is a newer thing, but in order for you to pair up in the way that you're doing the work together in real time with children, did it take a long time?
So the brick and mortar, again, I've been treating for 14 years, but this brick and mortar started about 3 years ago. And for that first year and a half, I was by myself, but I knew what I wanted, right? I'm a pretty persistent person. So when I want something, I'm like a little gnat in your ear. And I knew that I wanted to work with a chiropractor, and I found me a chiropractor, and that's where I'm at. And so I just bugged him until he said, okay. Because remember, he said he didn't want to be a pediatric chiropractor. I said, oh, yes, you will. You are going to be a great pediatric chiropractor. He's like, I don't do pediatrics. I'm like, well, okay. You're gonna. And then finally he was like, okay, I think I'm gonna do this. And that was about, gosh, a year and a half, 2 years, like, that you've been here full time, Matt?
Yeah, we combined and co-own the company now. But yeah, we went through this huge, like, growing process. We just did it. When you're on a mission, right, we knew we had something great. We knew we're onto something. And really our mission is we want to change the way the world treats our children. That's our big mission statement. So we have big goals. We kind of see a need that we can fit, we can help with. And we're like, let's jump to it. So we had to, like, learn and figure out how to communicate. You know, communication is very important. So we had lots of
fights,
back and forth. And a perfect example of this, chiropractors, we will typically reference the back. So I may say, well, this back is turning to the right. PTs may reference the body in the front. And so they may say the body in the front is turning to the left. Now we're saying the same thing, but it sounds different. And so we really had to work on what are we, okay, break it down. What are you specifically saying? And then we had to, like, retrain of how we're communicating with each other so that we spoke the same language. Because again, it all goes back to the kids. What are we doing? We want to be experts at what we do, work together for the betterment of the child that comes in.
Yeah. And I mean, the PT is more medical model. Chiropractors are a little bit more holistic in their approach. So combining these two, like we said, we were the black sheep. We still are. And that's because PTs don't like chiropractors and chiropractors don't like PTs. I don't know why. We all look at the body with our specific lens and we're all trying to help kids, but it just, for some reason, has never come together. But I think now it's, we've really brought awareness to, you can see both. You don't have to lie to your PT that you're not going to a chiropractor or vice versa. It's actually become more mainstream. We educate through our Connective University, PTs, OTs, chiropractors, pediatricians, and we're all harmoniously working together. So I think through everything, we're just changing that stigma that we can't have a collaborative approach. And so I think that's what I like the best.
So interesting. It's like when you're not in that world, you don't know. I would have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea that PTs and chiropractors, because from someone on an outside looking in, you look at both of those things and you're trying to help the whole child. You're trying to help with movement. You're trying to, I remember Angela Hanscom saying, you know, that physical therapy is, and she, some, I guess what people say, occupational physical therapy. Like, she's like, it helps you in the occupation that you're in, and the occupation of a child is play. Mm-hmm. So this is helping kids with their occupation. That's what a chiropractor is doing too, right, Matt? Like, you're saying, I'm helping people move. And you, even for up into adults, I love what you said. These are tools to help you move and feel better. So if you can move and feel better, that's going to help you in whatever occupation that you have, whether you're a child or an adult. So from the outside looking in, it seems like, oh, well, it's a perfect pairing. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, it makes total sense.
Yeah. But no one was doing it. And now you're doing it and helping kids in such substantial ways. And I could see that there would be a big learning curve to coming together and working together in the way that you do. And especially in a situation where a parent might be worried. There's some anxiety there, but it's really cool to watch. It's you at the same time. Yeah. Working together with the kids. I'm convinced about play, obviously. And you've got, you know, five kids that grew up outdoors. So I have seen firsthand, can testify to the gross motor and the fine motor that nature is providing for kids. But for someone who's not convinced, because, you know, we only have so much time with our kids. We only have so much time in the day. And there's a lot of activities out there. There's a lot of things we could sign them up for. A lot of other people are doing those things. And simple play seems sort of like a waste when we could be doing all these other things. So for a parent who's listening, who's on the fence, their baby, they got a toddler, what would you say to convince them to take some of the time of childhood and just put it toward play, purposeful play?
Yeah. So again, purposeful play is supporting your child's development through what feels like playtime.
So this is a difference. This is a difference. Can we just land there just for a second?
Uh-huh.
Because you use purposeful play. And I would say that all play is purposeful. But I think we're talking about two different things. I think all play is purposeful, right? So if we just, I'm like, oh, just let your kid, you know, you're out in the field, you let them kind of find what they want to find. That's going to be purposeful for them.
Yes.
But you're talking about, and you talked about it a little bit earlier too, Matt, if I just insert this little bit of extra thing, then I know, like the shaving cream was a great example, right? Then I know they're going to be moving their bodies in different ways. So can you talk about the difference between purposeful play And the sentence at play is purposeful?
Yes. You know, there actually are one and the same. Sometimes the purposeful play definition is almost for the parents, because it's like you're just letting your kid go out and feel the grass and climb. And what they're really doing is they are building those intrinsic muscles of their feet, and they are doing their bilateral coordination, working both sides of the body. So just making a definition of it almost makes the parent be like, oh, wow, I did that. I just let them go play. So it kind of goes together, but that's why I like calling it like purposeful play, because it makes the parent feel empowered that what they're doing is actually, you don't have to do all these crazy things, put them in all these extracurricular activities, because just doing this simple activity is so much contributing to their development. So they really do go one and the same. But I know with my own kids, I got very anxious. My girls are 20 months apart, and I got very anxious taking them to all these different places. And so I got in the habit of making our own like playtime and activities inside the house, outside the house. And it really was really simple things, such as I had a little sponge and they would clean and wash their little trikes car. And they would squat down and they would climb into it and they were getting dirty. But to me, as a PT, I was looking at it and I was like, okay, we're building upper extremity strength. We are building endurance by standing. We are having some tactile stimulation through the water and sponges. And to me, I guess I could selfishly maybe control what we're doing a little more because it was in my own environment, but we still do that to this day. And it keeps me a little bit less anxious as the parent, and it makes me, and they love it. So it really, it's so much easier.
What a win-win, right?
Yeah.
They love it. Mm-hmm. That's what I always say. It's so bizarre to me. It's like, that's what the kid naturally does, is they do things that aid in their development and they're having fun with it, like climbing the fence or these different ideas. But as a parent, if you're not a PT, you don't have that language or understanding to say, this is helping their upper extremity strength.
Yeah.
Or endurance. Actually, endurance isn't something I ever thought about until I spent time with a small child one time. And you know, it was like, our kids are running all over the place, and that one couldn't walk around the block.
Yeah.
And didn't have the endurance for that. And I thought, oh, it's an interesting piece of life that no one really talks about. It's not measured, but it matters, because you can do more the more endurance that you have. So Matt, what would you talk about? I mean, you've got a little one. When you're talking about purposeful play, what kind of things do you do?
Yeah. So that's a great question. I want to go back to the question that you had, Jenny, just a second ago, where purposeful play, like what is purposeful play and how, you know, what you say may be a little bit different. And I think a good way to think about it when it comes to gross motor development is proactive play. So maybe you have a child that's typical, they're not delayed, right? They're hitting their milestones, and say they're at, you know, 5 months and they're coming up towards the sitting milestone. You can be proactive with your playtime with a purpose. So play with a purpose, be proactive, and you know the next skill is sitting. Here's some things that you can do for that. And this is where maybe a container, you could have a container like a bumbo seat, or we like the up seat, where you can sit them there, give them a little bit of external support, have a toy that they can play with on the little tray. Now they're having to reach with two arms and interact with a toy, which is building some of that core strength. At, you know, 5 months, when you know that at 6-7 months, they're probably going to start sitting up. So you're just helping give them a little bit of a step up.
Oh, I like that. So you're looking ahead a little bit. And I saw a video about that. It was like the little one was sitting, and then it was like there was rings. Like they're just a little bit. And so then it was like, oh, I'm going to stand up.
Uh-huh.
So that was kind of an interesting thing to think about. Yeah, that what's coming and what might help. I tell you what, that sitting milestone is a big one, isn't it? I just remember, instead of having to lay them on the floor somewhere, you can sit them down and it's easier to pick them back up. That is a big one.
I know. Vertical play is a game changer.
Yeah.
But their independence and ours.
And the kiddos that come to us for our camps where they are delayed, and the ones that come, you know, from the 20 different countries, they typically will have a diagnosis of some kind where we're working on sitting, and that, yeah, if it comes naturally, like we don't think about it as parents, but to that child or to that parent that, of a 2-year-old that's still struggling to sit, think about going to the grocery store where they're not able to sit in the shopping cart at 2 years old. That's you know, that's more weight that they're having to move, that's more strain on the parent's body. So sitting is something like these little skills to some of these parents, they make a big difference. Like you said, you go to the bathroom, you don't want to lay them down on the floor.
Right.
You can have them sit.
Well, I saw one of the videos on your site where it was this sweet little, it was a little boy, I think, and he was having a hard time eating because he couldn't hold his body up. And that was another one of those videos that it was like 2 days later. And you can just see how for everything, for everyone, the kid looks like a totally different kid. So they're very hope-filled videos. I think parenting, I think sometimes we end up in a dark spot and we feel like there is no hope. Mm-hmm. And you see your videos and see that there's a lot.
Well, and I think the coolest thing about our method is it's just based on the biomechanics, the musculoskeletal system. It isn't fancy. Just like playing outside isn't fancy, our method isn't fancy. It's tried and true. The body has always been the same. So we're not doing these fads. We're not throwing them in the air and, you know, making them hang by one foot or whatever. You're not using all these different modalities to get them to do this. It's like just knowing and having a knowledge in the anatomy and physiology of a child. That's all you need. So it's so much more simple. And that's what we try to teach clinicians as well. But it doesn't have to be fancy. It just has to be efficient.
And then the simplicity, is that allow parents to take home some of the things that you've done and try it on their own?
That is the biggest thing that we're advocates for, because it doesn't matter what we do here in the office or what we do virtually. If a parent cannot take that home and that doesn't translate to them, then what are we doing? Because again, what's important to them is, you know, what can we do to make that parent and that kid's life easier? And a lot of it is giving them some type of functional independence. So if we're in the office doing all these crazy things and they can't do it, yeah, we're not going to see those results. So the coolest thing is, yeah, it's so simplistic. We are teaching the parents as we're doing it. And then they're going home and doing it. And they're like, oh my God, we have so many parents while they're here at camp. And they'll say, I went out to dinner with my kiddo, me and my husband, we hadn't been out to dinner in 3 years. And our kiddo sat there with their head up. And what you just did is you gave them their life back, essentially. And it was, so it has to translate back to the home. And if you aren't doing that, then it's a disservice to the family. It just is.
Wow, how empowering.
Oh, hey, everybody. It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck. And now we're back with a whole new podcast about unsticking it, launching in January. What happens when life gets in the way of our creativity instead of nourishing it? We talk to all sorts of guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders. So join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Get out of there, life gunk. Let us help you get back to your best creative self. Look for Unsticking It with Blair and Molly wherever you listen to podcasts, starting in January. Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking it.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down,
or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No-Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
What would be an example of something that you might do there in the office or virtually then that the parent would be working on with their kid, you know, throughout the week or in the coming weeks?
Yeah. So going back to sitting, sitting's a big one. Showing them that if this kiddo is slightly elevated off of the ground, their bottom is rather, and they have weight through their arms. So we'll show them different positioning techniques with easy to purchase Amazon, you know, like a little Amazon block, that little stair stepper back in the 80s. But using something like that and sitting on a little towel positioned, boom, you just took the kiddo that's only laying on the ground. And now, just with a couple different positions and tweaks, they can now be upright for several minutes to 30 minutes. And yeah, again, they're very simple. Just all about really more education, but sitting is a big one, because being vertical, having that independence is just key for like everyday life for the kid and the parent.
Isn't it interesting? Sometimes I think about like all of the old play equipment, like even the old playgrounds, and it's like, how do they know? No one really ever gives me a good answer. Like, how do they know? Like, we had that when we were kids. We had that thing that was a stair stepper, and then you'd flip it over, and it was a boat.
I mean,
and we loved that. And it's just interesting. It's interesting to me that at some point someone was like, these slides and these monkey bars and, you know, these things. And now they've gotten rid of a lot of it. But
I know.
It's like kids like this. It gives them a thrill, and it's helping them develop. Someone new.
Well, and it's that that kids are so creative. They're just like, they're not tainted by the outside world of all the things yet. And so it's like they see something, and I'm, even my own girls, I'm like, I would never have taken a box, an Amazon box, and made it into a boat and, you know, moved, you know, their sister around the floor. And I never would have thought about that, but it's like, that's where their mind goes. So play is easy for kids. It is, but we do have to get their, sometimes get their body out from underneath them and get it moving so they can enjoy play, because that's innate.
And what it seems like is, it seems like the kids catch on fairly quickly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because again, we're doing biomechanics. We are taking muscle and joint restriction. That's what he's doing. And then we're just playing. We're getting in these functional positions, hands and knees, standing, playing on tall knees. So that part's easy, but we have to pair it with taking away those restrictions, right? You can speak to it more, Matt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, innately, we're designed to move. So it's not like we have to educate, like sometimes we have to help them get out of the way of themselves. Mm-hmm. For example, as a chiropractor, if they have a restriction or something's not moving like it should be, torticollis, which is a shortening of a muscle in the neck, which causes a tilt and a turn, the more that they're going to do that, they may need help pushing through that arm. So we can remove some of those restrictions to help them connect with what their body is innately designed to do.
Yeah.
And then once you do that, it's amazing. You can watch the results because they're connected. Their brain understands what their body can do. Their body's able to move the way that their brain wants them to. And then you can go and have all the play that you want.
Yeah. Their main occupation. And then they're off. They're off and doing and growing. Yeah. I mean, it's such a service that you're providing. That then they can go on to these other things that help them learn and to grow. Yeah. Are you seeing a long wait list too? Like I remember Angela Hanscom, she said that was really her impetus to write her book, was that all of a sudden it was like these occupational therapy wait lists for kids were like a year long. You couldn't get in to see. So you guys are having people coming in from all over the world. Are you starting to see that?
I mean, yeah,
so we really try and have a concierge type service in our clinic here, because that is something that clinicians, that because we're again against a little bit of the medical model grain, we can have families that come in and we can work with them without a big wait list, because we're not trying to get reimbursed through insurance or things like that. So the therapists that are in that model, they're getting inundated with all these kids that need help, and then their schedule gets backed up. Well, we can, because we're able to get a progress so fast, you know, we may take 6 months and put it into 4 weeks.
Wow.
So where our schedule clears up, we are booking last year. I'll give you again, a couple more statistics. About 2 years ago, we saw 40 camps. Camps are our intensive therapy model. Last year, we saw 145. And this year, we're on track to break 200. So there's a huge need for this that's happening now. And we have more space now than we did a year ago, more therapists. So we're able to take these kiddos that need help and help them any way that we can. We book out typically about 6 weeks, but a lot of times we can get in about 3 weeks or so.
That's not bad at all. So if a parent listening and they're, I need some support, they could get in here fairly soon. But if that maybe was, maybe they live too far or just not a possibility, then you offer a lot of education through your online courses.
Yeah.
Right? Like you break it down with the different ages, the rolling, the sitting. Can you talk about what that's like?
Yeah, so we have Connective Community, and it is an online platform that caters to parents and shows them through easy to watch short little video clips how you can achieve some of these big gross motor milestones in the first, 18 to 24 months, crawling, rolling, sitting. And they're also in this platform with other parents so they can discuss, my kiddo's doing this. Is that weird? And the other parent's like, no. So it's a safe place that everyone is, just here for their kiddos. They're not there to place blame. It's just a really nice collaboration between having the knowledge and then also having that parent support. You can go to our website, www.connectivekids.com, and there'll be resources and it's right there and you can sign up to be a part of it.
Oh, interesting. Because I ended up at connectivecommunity.com and that's right where it breaks down. You could sign up for it right there too.
Yeah, you send both.
Well, there's a couple places that you could end up going. And this is, when you think about medical things, you tend to think like this is going to be thousands of dollars, but it's $40 a month.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little less than $39.99.
People like nines. I like nines. But yeah, it doesn't, because it wasn't about making this super expensive product. It was about sharing knowledge and really helping parents throughout the world and showing that it's not as hard as you think. And you're right. As one person, as one clinician, you can only help so many people. There's only so many hours in the day. Right. So really expanding the reach through our community has been exponential in taking what could have been an issue where they have to go to therapy and so much money to fixing it in 6 to 8 weeks.
Wow. And so much money and so much time.
So much time.
And here you can do, maybe there's things that you could do within your home.
Oh, a ton of it.
I always at least to try that stuff first. Like at least if you can try, and maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. Maybe you have to, maybe you're coming in for the camp and you're adding on, but like at least at the beginning, if you can try some different things in the privacy of your own home, in the comfort of your own home, and it's $40 a month, it's not hundreds or thousands of dollars. As sometimes I think we think of when we think about therapies, especially because like you said, they can last so long. And you have the community aspect. And Matt, you said there's a free gross motor checklist. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So the gross motor checklist, you can get it on our website. That's theconnectivekids.com. And on the top there, they'll have a resources. And there we'll have our free gross motor checklist, which has all of the gross motor milestones, things that you're looking for from 0 all the way up to 5. And it goes into, the rolling and crawling, but also like little things like, bringing hands to the mouth and these little inch stones, not just the big picture thing.
Jumping,
so it's a really great way of.
Yes, I know. I remember that one. I really do. I love that stuff. I remember we went to an open gymnastics. Those are fun. Like where I always liked those, like where it was like they would open the whole gym to you and it was like $5 for your kid and you could just go play for an hour and there'd be trampolines and foam pits and the kids would kind of try what they wanted to try. And I have a distinct memory with my oldest thinking like, when does he learn to jump on 2 feet? I had no idea.
24 months to,
And they have a range. So there's a lot of things that we don't focus on at all because just walking seems to be the end all be all. And then it's like, I don't even pay attention anymore. But I think casting a fishing line, all of those things are so intricate and fun. So it's really awesome that it goes 0 to 5. So lots of fantastic resources here. Connective_kids is the Instagram at Dr_Otto_DC. You can go there, connectivekids.com, connectivecommunity.com. And people are going to find all sorts of things that can guide them and help them in these tricky parenting years. Just so appreciate this. What an amazing thing that you're bringing to the world, a new thing. You just know, you're going to leave this impact. I mean, to come out with something new and to pair these things, this is going to roll on and last for generations. People are going to be like, who were the first people that did this?
Those crazy kids right there.
Emily and Matt, I mean, it's a thing. I mean, I've read so many books. It's like, who was the first person who talked about artificial intelligence? Who was the first person? And it's there. It's it's a thing. So I love that you are pioneers in what you're doing. We always end our show with the same question. And the question relates well because you talk about that when kids play, they have they tend to be having a good time. So this is a win-win. And the question is, what's a favorite memory from your childhood that was outside?
Oh, okay. This is the first thing that popped into my head. and it was making mud pies. Did you ever make mud pies when y'all were little? So we would, I remember like sitting on my ledge at like an old house. It must have been 5 or 6, and you would get the water and you get the sand, and then you start mushing it and molding it. Oh man, that was the best. I don't know. I just
and then good. You go offer it. You're like, who wants them?
Who wants some pie?
My 7-year-old still does that. I mean, she still does, and it's her favorite. You know, it's like we'll go to the river. We go to the river. I'm like, we always bring a little bit of pots and pans.
Yes.
Just, I mean, it doesn't matter. Whatever, lightweight. Get them at the Salvation Army, whatever the thrift store, and like some old bowls. You know, just like really cool ones. Like whatever. And she'll like, you know, she's pouring it in, and she'll add some little flowers, and it's soup. And you really do see, like, when you take a step back through the lens of what you're doing, it's like, oh, that's all that fine motor, and you know, they're bending down to get the water out of the river. All of that when you really take a step back. Lots going on with the mud pies and the homemade outdoor food.
Yes.
Yeah, I would say for me, I grew up in the Midwest in Chicago area, so definitely was outside a lot, and especially a lot of fishing. My grandparents lived on the Mississippi River, so we would fish for catfish. But I would say, yeah, the number one like thing that jumped in my head, me and my dad would go to this I forget what the landing, I think it was called, and it was a rod and gun club, and we just go and fish and just drive up there. We'd clean up the outdoors. They had like a man, you know, it was, I forget what they called it, like a mandatory cleanup day where we would go and spend the whole day cleaning up the trash that was there. And then we would just sit there and fish and like camp out. So that was a really great memory.
I love it. I love it. Love what you're doing. Love the hope that you're bringing. I think that's such a big piece of it. Bringing hope. Yeah. There are answers for parents, things that they can do to help enhance the lives of their kids. And then in turn, it helps with the whole family unit and the parents as well. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Jenny.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.